What about the impact of venetoclax in the normal risk situation? What do we know about that without adverse markers?
Oh, so when venetoclax was initially developed, the phase 1-2 was very broad. It didn't require people to have adverse biomarkers. And because there was not a requirement for adverse biomarkers, we know that there are excellent responses in both the TP53 abnormal, either mutated or deleted, as well as the wild type TP53. And we're not yet sure about durability. We need some additional data. We certainly know that in ibrutinib, there is a differential effect of durability, whereas the mutated or deleted patients have a less durable response to ibrutinib. We don't know if that is in fact true when it comes to venetoclax.
What is the typical duration of response that you see with ibrutinib in the relapse setting, 17p present and not present?
Well, the duration of response is actually quite prolonged. But one of the big problems that we see is that in the patients on ibrutinib, about 20 to 30% of patients are off drug by 2 years, largely secondary to intolerance. These drugs, though very well tolerated, the low-grade chronic toxicities can be difficult for patients. One of the more common toxicities for patients is the development of myalgias and arthralgias. This will frequently respond to a reduction in the dose of ibrutinib to 280 milligrams a day, but in some patients it requires discontinuation of the drug. We can also see development of atrial fibrillation, though I really feel that that's not an absolute indication for discontinuation of ibrutinib. One can treat with anticoagulants, including the drug I prefer is apixaban. And the reason that I prefer apixaban, it has a very low spontaneous bleeding risk. And I try to avoid the use of, obviously, antiplatelet agents because this will have a serious interaction with the ibrutinib. And you can use metoprolol or other rate-controlling agents for the atrial fibrillation. The other late complication can be hypertension, and in rare occasions, this will become very difficult to manage so that you, in fact, have to discontinue drug because of the hypertension.
Ibrutinib and hypertension.
Yes, and this tends to be a late effect. A lot of the effects of ibrutinib, the diarrhea, the bruising, these tend to be very early and you see them immediately. The diarrhea tends to resolve. If it occurs, it responds really well to loperamide. However, the late effects include this development of hypertension, atrial fibrillation, the myalgias, and sometimes the bruising associated with ibrutinib becomes intolerable. The other place where we have a lot of problem, remember, these are older patients, and it's not uncommon for them to have cardiac issues, is these drugs do not combine well with drugs like clopidogrel or other antiplatelet agents. And so someone who has chest pain and gets stents placed and has to be on dual antiplatelet therapy, these patients will need to come off ibrutinib because they simply won't tolerate it and the risk of bleeding becomes extremely high.
We've now seen the approval of acalabrutinib, although it was approved in mantle cell. Obviously, it's been looked at with CLL. Where do you see this fitting in, if at all, in the treatment of CLL at this point?
Well, you know, I think we need a little bit more data, but it looks to me like the atrial fibrillation rate's a little bit lower. There is some influence on the TEC kinases, so you still see some of the bruising, but it doesn't seem to be as severe. So it is possible that some patients who are intolerant of ibrutinib can switch to acalabrutinib. There was a study to this effect, and about half of the patients who switched from ibrutinib to acalabrutinib were able to stay on the acalabrutinib. The other half actually had recurrence of the symptoms that had them come off. Obviously, we have another option for intolerant patients, and that's idelalisib, which is a PI3 kinase delta inhibitor. The reason why I use this after ibrutinib for ibrutinib intolerant patients is the side effect profile does make it more of a challenge to use. So for the ibrutinib intolerant patients, it's a good choice. You just have to be aware of the infectious risk, the diarrhea, the transaminitis, the pneumonitis. But these are manageable issues if you take care in monitoring the patients.